There are those who say that life is an illusion, and that reality is simply a figment of the imagination.
Look who the birds have brought us this week. Welcome, and congratulations for crossing the threshold of realities. There's much to share if you know the language of the birds. Welcome back to the Godbox Cafe. This is your audio architect, Valkyrie, and I am so excited to present to you one of my most favorite magicians and celestial interpreters of the cosmic energies that we are being exposed to, given the proper capability of navigating in these very unpredictable and unstable times. Anytime you're in a liminal phase, you're going through transition and you need some guidance. And as above, so below, what is happening archetypally speaking amongst the planetary energies certainly applies on a microcosmic level and will certainly facilitate your capabilities of doing that inner work and perceiving the outer world from a place of balance and power. I am so pleased to introduce our guest, Gary Caton, one of my favorite astrologers and most beautiful human being. You are a gift to this planet, Gary. Let's open up with a brief summary of how it was that you came upon astrology and why you have dedicated 3 decades of your life in pursuing this study.
Yeah, that's actually really great, because when you asked me a series of questions that we're going to be talking about today, one of the first things that occurred to me is that my personal answer to those questions is very similar to the collective answer. I think that the collective is going through something that I went through when I discovered astrology, and that is essentially a disillusionment. The first part of any spiritual transformation is always very difficult. There's a falling out of love. You have to become disenchanted with the current worldview before you can find another one, right? You can't have both. You have to let one go before you can find another one. And then there's that liminal place in between. So yeah, I was always a really natural student. Just love learning. You know, I'm a Virgo moon. I was born at night. So really, if I was reading my horoscope according to the classical doctrines, I would read the Virgo column. Even though I'm in Sun in Aries and people think of me as an Aries, I'm really very much at heart a Virgo. I love learning. I've always been blessed with a good intellect. And I thought, man, when I make it to college, that's when my life is going to begin. Because I grew up in a small town. We were poor and I was always working on a farm, essentially. And I thought, when I can put all that manual labor behind me and I can really just embrace my intellect and just, I mean, and I'll go right into the wild blue yonder. It wasn't quite like that, actually. For a variety of reasons, nobody's fault in particular, I ended up at an engineering school because it's what I could afford. But I didn't really even realize yet, I really am an artist. I didn't really realize that until when I took my GREs, which is the test you take after you graduate with your undergrad degree, right? And I scored really high on language, it's high 80 percentile. That was, you know, it's just a little bit more than average amongst college graduates with the math, right? I was like 55. So I had no business being at an engineering school, actually. And I knew that in my soul, can't do this. This is 21 years old. I had a lot of life ahead of me. I need something more. I need magic. I can't live in this disenchanted world with all this academic figuring out equations every day, the moment of inertia on a beam, you know, like I can't do it. So that's it. And I walked away. I was doing fine. I mean, for me, it was a little bit disappointing, but I had well above a 3.0 average. I was fine as far as like it was passing. There was no objective reason for me. It was all very subjective, because at the same time, I was also receiving a calling from some really incredible dreams where animals were speaking to me and my dreams, and I was exploring caves with my friends. There's something else that's calling me. in my soul and I can feel it very strongly. And if I had a feeling like if I don't listen now, I could go an entire life and maybe end up regretting not having heard that call. I was very clear about the kind of crossroads that I was facing, which is more typical of most people. And that's like a midlife crisis kind of thing. But it happened for me at 21 instead of 42. But there was this very much this disillusionment with, yeah, academia is really not what I thought it would be. The world is really not what I thought it would be. And there's something missing, something really important that I've got to find it. And I think a lot of people are going through that now, too. You know, we live in a world that is dominated by, it used to be dominated by the Christian faith. Now it's dominated by scientism as a faith. Scientism is the world religion. I think we need to be a lot clearer about that. And scientism is a materialistic religion. We are caught in a very materialistic worldview, extremely so. More so than at any other time in human history, it's astounding, really, how impoverished we are spiritually. And I think that that impoverishment and that out of balance, a lot of people are starting to wake up to it and understand that, you know, I need something more. I need some magic. I need something spiritual. I need to be whole. I need to balance that other side of my life that's missing. So that would be my first guess, is that just like me, you know, a lot of people are having that experience. More and more people are having that experience and feeling let down with, it really doesn't matter what side, the fact that I have to say what side, because it's not just that we live in a very materialistic culture, but we live in a very binary culture. Not just with respect to race or gender, but with politics. And again, with materialism versus spirituality. And it's very much forces you into these either or decisions. For me, I don't feel like there's anything going on out there politically that actually represents what I feel and think. And so there's no option, there's no box for me to check. And I think a lot of people are waking up to that realization that they aren't truly represented, that who they really are is actually not being invited to play or to participate. And it really, when you begin to understand who I really am is not on the menu, it forces you to ask the question, so who am I really? Right? I know it's not on the menu, but I think it almost happens unconsciously. You realize, I know who I am is not on the menu, but I also know instinctively, maybe, if I were clearer about who I am, maybe it's more likely that I will find it on the menu. You see what I'm saying? So it kind of forces you into this place of exploration. I know what I don't want, but I still need to figure out exactly what I want. And to do that, I need to figure out who the hell I am. And that's a universal, whether you want to talk about it in terms of Joseph Campbell with the heroine's journey, or whether you want to talk about it in terms of any particular spiritual tradition, or if you just want to talk about it in terms of psychological development, it's the same journey. And there's a map for it, actually. One of the most astounding things for me, after I gave away a pretty decent academic career and life, no, I'm trying to find something else, and went through that dark time of not knowing who the hell I was or where the hell I was going. And after I got on my way, I started to find out that this path that I took was very archetypal, actually. Even though I didn't know it at the time, I was following an archetypal series of steps of transformation that were so clear to me in hindsight. And I was like, my God, there was a map. I got to tell people, because if I was to start that journey again, I would want to know. So that's something that I've really tried to work with along the way, is letting people know there is a map. It's not anything like we would experience on Google Maps. You type in your destination and it gives you every single step and the mileage to the degree. It's not a map like that. So sorry. If there is one, I don't have it. But it gives you a qualitative idea of where you are in the process and what the next step might look and feel like. And so, it makes it okay to be where you are. like I said, the first stage is dark. Negredo, the blackening, that's the first stage. There's a blackening. There's a putrefaction of the old way that has to break down before you can break through. You have to break down before you can break through, right? And I think a whole lot of people are experiencing that blackening right now. And you know what? That really is okay. But yeah, like you said, you have to really let go into that and be willing to embrace the liminal. And I think that's actually where we're at. There's been a lot of blackening, obviously, going on, but people are still kind of, okay, I'm hanging on. I'm just waiting for things to get back to normal. And here's the thing, that's not it. Back to normal is not it. That's not the journey. The journey is finding the light of a new world, a new consciousness, a new, like back to normal, man. If you're on that journey, I think that's going to be even more difficult than what we've been through so far, if not impossible, actually. Some people will obviously get back to normal, but the spiritual journey, that's not it. Getting back to normal is not the goal. You know, I think that that's one reason for the surge in popularity is that astrology actually offers astrology and esotericism and occultism. And it actually offers something that's not on the menu elsewhere. And it actually has a map. It has a path. People sense that. And it's incredible. We have a really good friend in common, Kelly Lee Phipps, back in the day. You actually started before either one of us in 2006. I can't remember exactly, probably about the time that Kelly was starting, you were starting.
Yes, yeah. I was actually listening to his podcast and it was an inspiration and I just decided that yeah. I would do likewise. And
yeah, same here. You know, he was an inspiration, is an inspiration to so many people. He actually invited me to be on his show and we had a great time. We always had a great time. And then one of my students said, Gary, you should have a show. I have no idea how to do any of that. Like, you might as well say I should run for governor. What are you talking about? And she said, that's okay. I know how to do all that. I'll set it up for you. All you have to do is show up. And I thought, you know what? That's a deal. You really can't beat that deal. And so thank you, Holly, very much for that from the bottom of my heart from the beginning. Without that, I probably wouldn't have been on this particular part of the journey. Back when we started this, there was very few people doing this kind of thing. There was like a handful of us, right? And so it was something new. There was a new technological niche. And now, like, goodness, everybody has a podcast. And that's great. And I think, but my point is that Kelly, his book was called A Celestial Renaissance. And he was a Renaissance person, very much so, very gifted in a lot of different areas. And his vision was that there could be this Renaissance. From the beginning, he was very clear about that. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bit more of a practical person and not quite that idealistic. It sounded great. I would love for it to have been, but I got to be honest with you, I don't think I was a true believer at the time. I thought, if we can get a little bit of that, that'll be great. And I'll consider that. I got to tell you, the guy was on target with so many things. It seemed so over the top at the time, but YouTube, he was on YouTube way before anybody, before it got to be this big thing. He was doing podcasting way before it got to be this big thing. And if I had just listened to him, the reason why I didn't embrace YouTube the same way I did podcasting is honestly, he was already doing it. I was thinking, there's no way I'm going to do it as good as him. So just let him do, that's his thing. I'll do my thing, whatever. Really, man, if I had just tagged along, for goodness sakes, the guy was so far ahead of his time on many levels. And he really had this vision of a celestial renaissance. That's the name of his book. And I think we're in it. I really think we're in it. And one of the reasons why is that back in the 60s, we had the same pattern. There was a very large chunk of the youth population was disillusioned, severely disillusioned with what was going on. They felt let down by the powers that be and they wanted something else. These are the people that created the modern astrology movement as we know it, right? Many of them I know personally and have been mentored by and standing on the shoulders of giants. I could name a whole list of them, but I don't know that it's really necessary. Maybe if I get an award one of these days, I'll have to formally, you know, like go down that list. But for today, I think we can just say that that generation really formed the bedrock, the foundation of what we're living through today. They really did. We need to give them credit for that. And all this okay boomer shit is not okay with me. I love that generation and I respect the shit out of them. They really did open up the frontier. And then it was a little frustrating. I'll be honest with you. At the same time, they were so large. They had been doing it for so long. They took up a lot of space. They really do in a good way. But also in my generation was coming up, there wasn't a lot of room for it. And I had literally had heard people saying, where are all the younger astrologers? And I felt like, hey, I'm right here. What are you talking about? And so it was definitely frustrating because there was a very clear sense that there just wasn't room for all the talent that was available to get a chance. I had to fight to get my spot at the table. I could have fought harder. I realize that now. But I fought enough, elbowed my way in, if you will, and got a spot at the table, which a lot of people didn't. Because the infrastructure that was set up at the time was based on like these groups, and they were somewhat based on president and secretary, and this format that was not really capable of embracing the technological revolution that was going on. And so what happened was my generation coming up, we got stymied a little bit as we were trying to get in the system. And then the next thing you know, this technological revolution comes along, and then the next generation just comes charging in. And then, so now there's like three generations of astrologers out there that are all really good in their own ways. That's what's incredible, is that the logjam that my generation encountered was just completely blown out of the water by the YouTubers and all the Instagrammers and all this. And God bless them. I'm glad that they didn't have to put up with the logjam that I had to put up with. I'm really happy that the renaissance that Kelly envisioned is actually happening. I think it's a wonderful thing. I do think that the level of quality and the level of seriousness, I think there can be like a balancing that happens. We can embrace some more academic seriousness, and we can embrace some more Saturnian discipline and whatnot going forward. I think we're going to have to, actually. But what's happened is, in the process of having three generations of astrologers take the stage, we have an incredible diversity of virtual cornucopia of astrological methods and schools and out there that no matter what spiritual tradition, you're very much unlike the political scene right now where you got red and blue. No, there's a full palette out there of astrology waiting for you. Like, it doesn't matter what color spectrum your spiritual vibe is on, I guarantee you can find something. And that's incredible. That's really because nature loves diversity. Nature rewards diversity. Diversity is something that has always been a positive thing in nature, and it's always been a positive thing in culture, right? Astrology came out of this time period where, in the post-Alexandrian conquest, right, Alexander notably didn't say, hey, I've conquered you, now become Greeks. Didn't say that. He said, I've conquered you, now pay me tribute, which, okay, render unto Caesar. Even Jesus was down with that. But he said, hey, I don't want you to become Greeks. In fact, why don't you bring your scholars to Alexandria and tell us about who you are? Incredible diversity flourished there in Alexandria. And that's where the traditions that we all are descendant of came from, as far as the Western traditions anyways. It came out of that diverse cultural mixing bowl that was Alexandria. And then later, the Islamic world back then, Baghdad. Baghdad became the next cultural mixing bowl and so forth. And then Istanbul, Constantinople, and so forth. So I think that's where we are right now. And it's incredible. It's a little bit hard, obviously, because there's no real standards. Which house system do I use? Well, we could probably have several podcasts about that. And in the end, it would still be, you got to make an informed choice as an artist, what palette you want to work with. And that's just, it's part of the deal. But I think this is very much in line with where we are in the Great Conjunction cycle. We're at the shift from the earth element into the air element, the great conjunctions of Jupiter and Saturn. And guess what? The last time that this happened, where we had the great conjunctions in air signs, that's when there was this flourishing of new ideas. And there was all these old ideas that became new again. There was a lot of translations of old texts that, and this knowledge became available. We're going through the same thing right now. There's literally some of the texts that were translated back then. They were translated from Arabic or Sanskrit into Latin. Now they're being translated into English. So we literally find ourselves at a Renaissance point. And actually, astrology is one of the few disciplines that show that. You certainly don't see much of a Renaissance going on culturally. You know what I'm saying? Or academically, I don't think. But in astrology, you can see it very clearly, which I think is incredible. And I'm really happy about it. It would be easy for me to get all upset and say, keep that down. I came first. And rah, rah, rah. I don't feel that way at all. I think it's incredible. I think that diversity helps all of us. And it helps ultimately the art that we love is better for it. Maybe since at least the Belle Epoque, where there was the occult revival there in France, I think we're seeing, arguably, you could say the early 20th century was an extension of that with the theosophy and all that. And at least since then, I don't think we've seen a flowering of the esoteric than like we have seen now. And so it's really incredible to be alive and be part of it.
Yes, firsthand experience counts for a lot. And you have had the additional privilege of bearing witness to these transitions as they have occurred. So you have a very unique point of reference because you were sandwiched between those who came before, and there's power in places that you don't expect there to be either. So as you pointed out, the priesthood is now wearing white lab coats. So... And it's very five senses limited with respect to the parameters by which these explorations are occurring, whereas astrology, by its very definition, cannot be confined to that. And that I found personally extremely empowering because the one thing, and this is part of my shamanic training as well, Churchill said, if you're going through hell, keep walking. So
that's it.
Everything changes. So even the shitstorm will appease, and you just have to stand firm, anticipate where these roller coaster rides will take us to the highest highs and the lowest lows, and navigate and find equilibrium. And at least from my perspective, you have come a long way towards giving me that sense of equilibrium whenever I listen to what information you're presenting.
Thank you.
And you throw yourself into the flow. That's it. You have to surrender to that
flow. That's what it's about. Yeah.
And astrology gets you there.
Yeah. And I think that what you're talking about, there's a deep sense of faith that comes. I was homeless, man. Literally, I was at one point in time, like all I had was my pocket dowel and a blanket. Those were my possessions. And I was alone in the world. And all I had was my faith and my willingness to explore to guide me. And I came out all right. When you've experienced something like that, there's a faith, there's an unshakable sense of faith that you carry with you after that. And I think that it's in me. You can hear it in my voice, I think. I think you can feel it in the words that I choose. You can feel it in the words I don't choose. It's just a part of me. In the I Ching, they call it Kung Fu. That's what Kung Fu is. It's inner truth. And it says, Kung Fu moves even pigs and fishes. And you know, when I got married, I was a dog guy. I always had dogs. And my wife, she wanted a cat. I've held space. I've been a tender of the cat temple for 20 years now. And I realized at some point, if they're being challenging, you know, they can be very moody creatures and very, it's often like, what in the world? Right? And yet I realized they're responding to me. If I can find my own equilibrium, as you said, it kung fu affects pigs, fishes, and cats too, right? And so in the process of becoming a cat herder, I think I've refined even more, realizing that the interstate that with which I'm navigating, it really affects everyone I encounter. And honestly, it's kind of dangerous territory, because if the ego gets a hold of it, ooh, look out, because ego being ego. But it's not just that, whatever equanimity and whatever faith that I can bring in, people feel that and they can sort of borrow a piece of it, if you will. I truly feel that if we can bring in the light of the spiritual dimensions and hold it, that we can affect even more change than if we were to dedicate our lives completely to radical political activism, for instance. But we can affect at least as much, and I think probably more. I think that the spirit is, as it says in the Tao, the incorporeal is the source of the corporeal. So as much as I appreciate, and there's many people, MLK, lots of people who were radical political activists that I respect tremendously, I still think that on a spiritual level, we should be able to do as much or more. And I think that we have only tapped the very... Now, let me be clear. I don't think that becoming political as an esoteric practitioner, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about holding light, literally being a light bearer, a light keeper, a lighthouse, right? The Rosicrucians literally have a ritual for that, where you bring down the light through the various sephirot of the Kabbalah, and you hold that light around your lodge. Well, we could hold that light around a friend or a group of friends or a group of people or humanity. I think that's something that has been vastly underestimated, the power of that. We have just scratched the surface of what we can do with that. And I think that really waking up to that potential is part of what we're going through. Because as you said, the priests are now, it's very much like that 2112, you know, priests of Syrinx. We've got it all figured out. Just, we don't want to hear about any of these alternatives. Just get with the program and so on. And the thing of it is it's very hard when you've given your life completely and people diss it as pseudoscience, or they diss it as this, or people would say, oh, I don't believe in that. For a long time, I would say, well, you don't need to believe. It's a language, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I turned all that around. And now my response is, no, we are not a pseudoscience. What's science is pseudo-hermetic. And it's kind of this Luke, I am your father moment, right? Because astrology is the father of astronomy and science. The hermetics is the father. Hello. Respect your elders, respect where you come from, acknowledge the foundation upon which you stand, but they refuse to do that. And you know what? In martial arts, when you have a weak foundation, you are going down, right? It's a fact. When your foundation is not solid, you're going down one way or another. And so it's really important to understand that in hermetics, there are three principles. There is absolutely salt. The materiality of something is one of those, but it's only one. And you've got to give credit where credit is due. As far as materiality, science has, it's pretty incredible. I mean, they're about to launch a satellite that is the follow-up to Hubble, and it's supposed to be able to see to the beginning of time, like literally to the Big Bang. That's pretty freaking incredible, okay? I'm not sure, you know, that what they say about staring into the abyss, right? So there's that. But it's incredible to think that we can look back through and possibly to witness something like that. And so, but again, that's only one third of the hermetic curriculum. There's also soul. And by soul, what I mean is the fiery driving force that keeps us alive. It's really, in terms of your body, it would be the lower chakras, that fiery driving force that motivates us, that we tend to want to pretend isn't there or cover up with polite or whatever. It's definitely the shadow is part of that. Shadow is the dark part of that, but there's a golden shadow too. I remember when one of the things that turned me off about academia is they were saying, I took a class in anthropology because I was thinking, well, maybe I'm just on the wrong field. So I took a class in anthropology and they were trying to tell me, yeah, Homo sapiens and Homo neanderthalensis, yeah, they cohabitated the same region for tens of thousands of years, but there was no hanky-panky going on, or it was limited, right? Yeah, right. I mean, come on, man. What is this? This Victorian kind of cover-up? No, we have these instincts that have kept us alive as a species for hundreds of thousands of years that we should embrace. That's part of the spiritual journey, is learning that your body is an oracle. It tells you very clearly, very strongly, especially for an Aries. That's, I tell you, man, every time that I deny my instincts and I overthink, I think to myself, you did it again, you fool. How could you still be learning that lesson? But it's because we live in a society that totally shames us for being instinctual and says, no, 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 you got to be in your head 24/7. And that's the only truth and blah, blah, blah. Right. So we try not to beat myself up for it. But I also try to remember your gut is telling you something. Give it, at least give it a listen. And if you decide to go another way, at least you listened. At least you gave it a moment to say, hey, gut, what's going on? You know, what is this about? Because you can't go with your gut 100% of the time, because you'll just be impulsively zig and zagging all the time and you won't really have any direction. It's kind of like in the chariot card with, you know, you have the dark horse and you have the light horse. Well, if one horse is always pulling, you're going to get way off course. One is always pulling stronger, no matter which one it is. And then, of course, you have salt, you have body material, you have the sulfur, the soul, the instincts, and you have spirit, you have consciousness, which if you talk to most scientists, they don't even acknowledge that it exists. It's just a bunch of random things going on in your head. That's silly. It's naive. It's childish. Get over it. That's where the real problem is, because you know, spirit is the thing that brings forth the material in all esoteric and all, it is the source of the material. And so if you worship the material, but you deny the source of that material, then that's a real problem. And you end up with a lot of dysfunctional ways of being and thinking and so forth. And so that's why I think if we were just going to do a report card, I'd say science on the material side of things, you got to give them their 4.0. I mean, wow, like there's a lot of incredible stuff. With respect to motivation, I mean, as much as Freud, you know, there was a lot of problems with, but bringing out the unconscious and bringing out and Freud and Jung and the so-called soft sciences, we've come a long way in understanding how human beings are motivated, but we're still in the place where the little we do know about it is being used to manipulate people to sell stuff. You know, it's being put into service of the material, pretty much. Best case scenario, maybe give a C, maybe, probably a D. And then on the spiritual, I don't know that we probably a zero. Anybody who's ever been through grade school knows it's hard to pass with a zero on your scorecard. So yeah, science is pseudo-hermetic. That's a fact. And they really need to get their head around that and to own up to the fact that they're essentially what they're doing. You have this myth of Uranus and Saturn, right? And what did Uranus do? Uranus wanted to repress everything, put it back in the box. No, no, no. We're not going to deal with that. It's monstrous. Like, stick it back in the box. Isn't that what we're doing with so much of who we are, our emotions, our instincts, our spirituality? No, no, no. Put it back in the box. It's not acceptable. And then it took this castration event. So there's this violent struggle between the father and the son that has to happen for any progress to be made. If you can stop repressing it and just allow it space to be, and actually honor, a lot of what we built came out of these explorations that were done by people who called themselves astrologers and alchemists. Some of the most beloved and revered scientists were alchemists and astrologers. If we could come to a place where we are willing to honor that, I think that would be a lot more healthy, don't you? And I think it would be a place where we could maybe honor that there's some creativity. Even science could do with a little embracing a little bit more of that within its own ranks. And maybe they could start to figure out, because science, honestly, I think especially physics, pretty much since Einstein, it hasn't gone anywhere. It's not going anywhere because they don't know what the hell to do with quantum theory. They have no idea what to do with it. You know what they need? They need stuff that's more out there than astrology to explain it. They need alternate universes and all this crazy stuff. And hello.
Cue Star Trek.
Right? Maybe if you guys were willing to embrace where you came from, you could figure, you'd have a better chance of figuring this stuff out. Because look at the base, one of the basic findings from quantum theory is that the simple act of observing the experiment changes the outcome. So there you have it. Consciousness is inseparable. You cannot separate consciousness from the salt. The materiality and the consciousness are inseparable. And yet we're still trying to separate. I think that what's going on in this Renaissance in the esoteric arts really is a very healthy thing for society. And I think that when people who want to keep it down because it represents a challenge to their authority, and that's the thing, is what I see going on in the world right now really is this. If people were honest, we don't know what the hell is going on. If you're really honest, we don't actually really know whether it's quantum physics, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's politics, whether it's economics, we don't know what the hell. Come on, economic forecasts make astrologers look rational. Give me a break. We don't know what the hell is going on. But when you put that white coat on, you're saying, I know what the hell is going on. I'm an authority. All of a sudden, I have to know. So you get in this place where you have to then say, no, 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 this and that and the other. No, those are false. Those are misleading. Those are fake news. Throw that in the garbage bin and only accept my reality. Because if we could let go of some of that and get into that liminal place that you were talking about in the beginning of, we don't really know. You have to embrace that liminality before you can be transformed. It's part of the curriculum. There's Negredo, there's Albedo. Part of the Albedo is letting go and surrendering to the process. You don't know where the light's going to come from. You know, you have faith that there's light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what's going to get you through the tunnel. But you don't actually know where the magic, what particular direction it's going to come from. So you have to literally open yourself that it could come in ways that you would never have expected. And it probably, and most of the time it does. Every once in a while, you make a prediction and it's dead on. That's great. But more often than not, it happens in ways you weren't expecting. If you are the expert who always knows, how are those unexpected things going to be allowed to happen? They aren't, is the answer. So there's this very dysfunctional, unhealthy place that we have with the mystery and the natural growth process that is who we really are. And it is really how the universe works.
The fact remains that we do have five elements. You have fire, air, water, earth, and ether. And we are swimming in it right now. My understanding is that the Fermi bubbles that were at a 90 degree angle to our solar system exploded. And since 2013, we've been swimming in that plasma. And I would venture to say that that plasma contains information and that our receptivity will dictate whether we can access that information or not. So
that's, yes.
Your opening introduction by way of your own personal journey and what you described being homeless, that is the fool in the tarot deck with his little bag.
Absolutely.
All he's got in the world is in that bag, and he's going to jump off that cliff. Everyone now is obligated to make that jump. Sure, it takes a lot of courage, and it is mandatory to drop a bunch of belief systems that no longer serve. Man. And
yeah,
the faster you let go of that, the more quickly new opportunities and alternatives that are more appropriate to jumping.
I should say, Yvonne, when I left, I had a whole lot more than in my pocket Dow and a blanket. And I had to let go of that shit before I could really be free. You know?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. So there is, however, a price for freedom. I believe there was an engineer who wrote, "Freedom is a two-edged sword." He was hugely innovative, but he was also into the occult. It was
nice.
Really fascinating that he combined these two. And so there is a responsibility when it comes to emancipation and how you treat that freedom and what that freedom entails. So are you giving your power away or are you reclaiming it? And what exactly does that look like? And maybe the path you're walking is not the right one. And you're going to have to cut the cord on that and do a free fall. And No one's comfortable with that. But the moment you make a choice that's in your comfort zone, you're likely not making the right one because you won't spiral up an octave if you take an easy route.
Yeah. I mean, there's degrees. I think that for me personally, you know, making the safe choice all the time is not going to result in growth. There's no doubt about that. But for me personally, there's some areas of my life where something's got to be okay to just be status quo and just making the safe choices. And then I'm going to take a risk here. I'm going to take a risk there, right? That's healthy. Healthy boundaries are semi-permeable. They do actually shut out some things. And they said, no, not for me. That's not mine. That's not my journey. That's not my path. I'm not actually curious about that. But they allow other things in. So, yeah, we can't just complete chaos where we're choosing the uncomfortable every single time. At least I can't. I need a little bit of comfort. I've got a Taurus Mars, I guess I'll blame it on. You know, I need some comfort. But you do have to remember to challenge yourself and to actively choose to go outside your comfort zone. That's one of the responsibilities of freedom, absolutely. And also the other responsibility of freedom is that of not knowing, of being okay with not knowing and being okay with being the final authority. No one else is going to make the choice for you. You have to make the tough decisions and you got to be okay with being wrong. And going back and starting over. One interesting thing about the Fool and the Tarot for me is that I've been on this journey for so long. I'm starting to see the journey through the Tarot as kind of a game of chutes and ladders. Remember that game when you were a kid, you know, where you, whoops, back to the beginning. And it's easy if you see getting to the end as the goal to get, oh my God, I can't believe I'm back at the beginning. And oh, what a fool I've been. And think about all the negative ways we did. Just yesterday, somebody on Facebook was saying, that who I respect and actually had a really good message, but he says, every time I'm foolish enough to open Facebook, all I see is people are, and I was, well, good for you for being the fool, bro. Good for you for being foolish now and then. Right. But it's easy for us to say, oh, I got shuffled back to the beginning. Damn it. But what if we go, oh, I got shuffled back to the beginning. Man, I get to begin again. I'm like, holy shit, how many times am I going to get to begin again? I'm actually now in a place of beginner's mind if I open up to it. All things are possible. Holy shit, I was maybe in a stuck place over there. I can now maybe zoom up through here in a way I couldn't before. So yeah, absolutely. I think that embracing liminality, embracing not knowing, embracing your fuck-ups, embracing that you don't know it all, you're never going to know it all, and you're still screwing up, you're still learning, no matter how advanced you are or how advanced people expect you to be. Oh, yeah, whoops, I really screwed the pooch on that one. And just being humble and being like, yeah, I had a bad day and I got caught having a bad day at absolutely the wrong time. And here I am back at the beginning. Okay, well, fortunately, I have a lot of tools. I have a lot of learning. And so, okay, here we go. So that's the price of freedom, is that you have to be willing to accept that you don't always know. And that the first step on the heroine's journey is refusal of the call, right? And to be able to find yourself and realizing, I was talking to a younger student not that long ago, and she was saying to me, every time I say something, I hear you rejecting it. And I heard her saying to me, essentially what she was saying to me is, you're refusing the call. And then I realized, okay, I really could open up a little bit and try a few things. And the next step is that the meeting with the mentor, where you get the magical tools that are going to get you through the dark part of the journey. understanding the map and understanding where you are in the map and being able to hear where you are in the map and being able to know what the next step is and what your responsibilities are in that step. And so I realized I need a mentor. I need to learn something. Right now I'm refusing a growth opportunity and opening up and being willing to learn. And it was really neat for me to be back in that place. And so I literally picked something that I know nothing about and put myself in that place of the absolute beginner. And it's been really tough, but it's been really fun too. And it's been really healthy for me to force myself, because what it does is it forces you out of that rigidity, and you have to become malleable. You have to become flexible, and you have to become like a child again, become like that fool again and say, I don't know what tomorrow brings, but I have this bag of tricks and I have the faith that I'm going to find a way. So here we go.
That's absolutely glorious in terms of the best possible approach to finding ourselves in unfamiliar water right now, where anyone is concerned on a global scale. I believe we have to continue this conversation because we've only scratched the surface. But what I would like for the moment now, and thank you so much for offering up your wisdom and your time, Gary.
Welcome.
Please let our listeners know how they can find you. And if I'm not mistaken, you're offering courses, because for me, astrology was the way that I found a bridge between the head and the heart. And they say that the path between those two is the longest distance to travel. So certainly finding a way to create a bridge between those two forms of wisdom that need an equal voice.
Yes.
You will most assuredly provide that wisdom in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, and my journey has actually been, I was very much more of a person who knew how to be in my heart. And I had to find my way to the head. I had to rediscover the underlying philosophies. And I think I kind of overdid it. Now I'm back to where all the philosophy and the head stuff, you've got that. You don't need any more of it. You need to now actually find that middle place between the head and the heart. It's where I'm at. And so I really appreciate that you offering it that way. And so my website is dreamastrologer.com, and I have a membership program there. I offer a monthly report where I do a variety of magical elections where you can use these for marketing. You can use them for meditation. You can use them for magical acts to try to attract wealth to you or various things. And I put that report out every month. And then what I've decided to do with this coming year is I'm going to offer a series of classes on how to best make use of that. So I'm going to teach people the philosophy that's underlying all this and the mechanics that's underlying all this. And then I'm going to try to, like you said, show them the ways to engage their heart with the material. Mercury was Kazemi, the sun, in the first decan of Sagittarius there. So I followed my own advice and used one of my magical elections to start the class. So I began writing the curriculum yesterday. We're going to have a series of classes with that. And at some point, I'm going to hopefully reach a point where I can actually, for me, it's a good thing, but I'm nearing a place where I'm going to have to shut down my practice and make it only open to those people who are members. Because I've got enough members now where serving them is a full-time job. And that's a great thing. And I'm really happy about it. But the problem with that is I can only serve so many people. And so this might be the last year to get in on that program. At some point, I will have to say, well, I'll put people on a waiting list or something, which I've been really resistant to. And so it's a great time to get in on that and be part of that program. And what I really hope to do is not just to train people in how best to use these reports and this information that I'm giving them, but I'm also hoping to maybe even train people to take this hermetic paradigm that I'm putting together and become able to pass that on themselves. And so I'm going to be doing some peer supervision and supervising people, teaching this material to people that come in. And then once they've been supervised and teaching it, you know, I'm going to just give them the keys and say, fly away and be free. And so there's that opportunity as well that's on the table. And yeah, it's really exciting because for a long time, I sort of avoided having a curriculum because I think that myself, academia never offered the curriculum that I needed. And so I've been very hesitant to impose a curriculum on anyone else. And I've tried to keep things open, let people define their own curriculum. But it became very clear to me at this point in my career that I actually need to form a curriculum. And so that's what I'm working on. And so if it sounds like something that people want to be a part of, and it's a limited time, that's going to be available. It should be still available for the next year, but after that, I'm not so sure.
Perfect. I will put that information in the show notes so that people who are wanting to participate within the time frame that is currently available will afforded the opportunity for consideration. Thank you once again, Gary. I'm sure we will resume this conversation because there's a great deal more to
absolutely to looking forward to it.
Tap into. Likewise, thank you so much for your time and what you're doing, bringing thank to the you. World.
Yeah, and thank you for being one of the pioneers of this genre. And it's great to have you back.
A big shout out goes to our patrons: Ingrid, Jeannie, Marie, Colin, Gail, and of course, our co-producer, Danielle. We couldn't do this podcast without your support. And for all of you patrons, I have an additional hour conversation with Gary that subscribers to this podcast will have access to. Let's head on over and hear what he has to say.
Réfléchir, cela signifie de toujours penser de manière critique. Et penser de manière critique, cela signifie que chaque pensée sape ce qu'il y a en fait de règles rigides et de convictions générales. Tout ce qui se passe lorsqu'on pense est soumis à un examen critique. C'est-à-dire qu'il n'existe pas de pensée dangereuse pour la simple raison que le fait de penser est en lui-même une entreprise très dangereuse. Mais ne pas penser est encore plus dangereux.
But I would say not thinking and not in a panic this year, say Pluto.